Hi, I'm Fuller. I'm 17 right now. I'm going to be 18 in 21 days, yes. Just graduated high school. I got into hacking about 7 years ago, really. That's when my parents got our first computer at home, and I promptly crashed it in 4 days, so we had to take it back for them to fix it. Have read almost every single book my local library has on computers, hacking, everything like that that's technology related in that area. I've even helped other people like Nimrod here, helped him come to figure out what hacking really is, and help him out, even though he's not all that great yet, but he's it's a learning process. Everybody's learning process. Compared to somebody like Johnny X, who's one of the other hackers here, I know like almost as he does to me almost in that relationship. But the other people like Cheshire back there know a whole lot more than even Johnny X in some areas, and so Johnny X knows not that much compared to some. But everything's a learning curve. Best way you can find information is talk to others and join local 2600 affiliations and stuff. And somebody else wants to tell them about themselves now?
All right, I guess I'll go. What happened with me was I had gotten to the hacking scene. Oh, I'm sorry. Name's Lothar, by the way. I have a tag right here. All right. Anyway, I had gotten to the hacking scene roughly about a year ago, actually here at Dragon Con at the 201 panel, which is, ironically enough, I'm hosting it this year. I don't know why they let me on that, but whatever the case, what I was beforehand was a graduate student in history at Clemson University. Afterwards, I had pretty much been spinning my wheels, not really knowing where I wanted to go with this. But then, you know, in other words, I was searching for something practical because I knew sooner or later I was going to get a master's or perhaps a PhD in history. PhD takes about 6 years to complete. A year afterwards, just looking for a job somewhere in a slot, so I knew I was pretty much in the wrong business. Anyway. Okay, thank you. You can tell us in my first panel, so... Anyway, afterwards, I had gone to Dragon Con because I had originally been involved in what's called the Xenaverse, which is basically online fandom of Xena Warrior Princess. I had actually seen a magazine 2600. At first, I saw the news groups, and you know, I was wondering, there aren't really many news groups that have a number in them. So I looked at that, and I looked at some of the postings, and I was a little bit intrigued. People talking about what I assumed to be an illegal, terrorist activity at the time, discussing it openly right on Usenet, and you know, it kind of worried me a little bit, but then I thought, okay, you know, I'm kind of getting in the groove here because I've also looked at other extremist cultures on the internet. So anyway, when I heard that 2600 was actually doing something on the Dragon Con panel, I thought, okay, you know, I'll just check it out, you know. And I found these people who, you know, you go to the Xena track, right? And it's more of, you've got them where it's more very erudite, academic, very much... kind of, you know, very much a give and take, but none of the really charisma, I guess you could say. Whereas when I went to 2600, on the other hand, of this panel, I saw some people who were extremely enthused about their field and what sort of process they were doing. I mean, you know, in other words, it seemed they had a plan of action of sorts. And this intrigued me. In fact, and afterwards, I thought, you know, hacking... You know, obviously, afterwards, I had gotten past this whole hacking as just, you know, illegal terrorists going around cracking Pentagon war papers and whatnot. And afterwards, I thought, you know, what I wanted to do was go into education. At the time, I thought, you know, I'll just dump the whole PhD idea and just go into being a teacher, of course, after student teaching. I promptly dropped that idea. But whatever the case, I wanted to combine something with hacking to do with institutionalized education. And after I read a few books and did some research, I found out that the mentality of your average educator, of your average teacher, is probably a 180 degree from the average mentality of the hacker, especially in the way that both approach the subject of education and technology. Whereas in traditional educational structures, it's very much hierarchical, very much administration at the top, giving teachers directives, objectives that they have to complete, set by the state, and then sooner or later, technology is implemented, but it's implemented only in a very old school fashion. That is, it's pretty much a glorified encyclopedia. that they're using computers. Whereas I saw the hacking subculture, and I realized this is true collaborative learning. I mean, you know, they talk a lot of BS about collaborative learning in the teacher colleges. No one wants to implement it because, okay, I'll admit, the sharpest knives in the drawer do not go into education usually. You know, I've pretty much seen it's almost like a different universe. You go from engineering in one school in the same university, and then you go to education, and it's just the subject matter is being talked to me. I couldn't picture any one of them being in Dragon Con anyway or going to something like this. But whatever the case, I'll wrap this up. My thesis, which I'm going to be starting in a PhD program in Social Foundations of Ed, starting this August, actually. My thesis research will probably start towards the end of the year. What I want to do is see how technology, of course, you know, everyone says this is the great social transformer, but I want to see how the hacking subculture, which I consider to be probably the current vanguard of online collaborative learning, comes into conflict with that of hierarchical institutionalized education, so the way that they try to implement technology, to kind of see the conflict and perhaps some consensus that can arrive as well. So, that's my gosh,
Nimrod. I'm Nimrod. I'm 15 years old, obviously a minor. I first got interested in computers in fourth grade when my dad brought home our first computer. It was originally for his work, for him to use the office, but eventually they decided it was so old they just gave it to us. I was always interested in, you know, how things work, curious to learn all the time, constantly asking my dad questions about the computers, and I always liked to go work with him and hang out where he had the huge mainframe type stuff, because he works at HP. But anyway, I moved here and I met John, and I found, well, sorry, Fuller. I've just known him longer as John. Sorry. Anyway, I met him, and for a while there, I was on the AOL scene. I was like one of the first million users to actually subscribe to AOL, or my parents were. But I got into that little Lido. You know, make the little proggies that make pictures
script
in the chat
kitty.
Room. Yeah, script kitty. Basically, I was, and I thought I was like, you know, a big bad hacker or whatever. And, you know, I could do all this stuff on AOL. And when I met John, or Fuller, sorry.
Just pick one name. How's that?
Yeah, okay. When I met Fuller, you know, saw him doing stuff with computers that I'd never seen done before and stuff like that. And he showed me a lot that I had never seen before. And he got me onto the SE2600 list, and then I started learning more about what a real hacker is, not just some script kiddie that has a bunch of proggies that they can do weird stuff with. But then I started learning, and I still have a very long way to go before I have any significant amount of knowledge in my brain, but it's a very high learning curve. It's a lot of information to absorb, especially for a minor. But if we're just doing, I'll go into it later, but this is just an introduction, so.
One thing I thought of when I was doing this panel is ways of growth of how people kind of learn becoming first when they're like don't know anything about computers or education and stuff of technology, and then getting to be on the level of Johnny X or me or anybody else who is in 2600 or works in like a security field or any major technology field. Sort of first you don't know anything. Then you look up, it's like, whoa, cool, I could do all this really cool stuff. Then you find out it's a lot harder than it really looks like it does. In the hacking world, I was actually once a script kiddie. In a way, I was getting onto BBSs and looking, whoa, cool, I can do all this really cool stuff to my own door games when I download them and look at all these the little key presses you can do to make them do stuff. Or would download. I'd only did a couple of minor cracks into systems. That was my first internet access, using a minor backdoor that they didn't kick people off after they started charging everybody, and I found a couple back holes in their software there to enable it. They kicked everybody off 6 months later that didn't pay, so that ended that. After you become a script kiddie, sort of, sometimes you learn what a real hacker is. I know I did, and Nimrod here has. You get to know other hackers and think, you know, I really thought I knew a whole lot. It's sort of like when you go from eighth grade, you go into high school, you're at the bottom again, and you go from senior in high school, you think, whoa, cool, I graduated at the top of my class. You go to some place like MIT, and it's like, my God, I'm in the lowest one percentile of the class, not the top one percentile or something. And from there, all you can go is further in your knowledge, and best way to do it is, you know, as I said, read books, find other hackers, sometimes help like I did. I took Nimrod on sort of as an apprentice, if you want to use that term. Whenever he has questions, he asked me. I guess that's the best way you can do it. Take somebody on and help them learn, no matter where they are. So,
let's see. Okay. I guess I'll add some things here. Actually, first of all, we kind of ask ourselves, you know, minors in hacking, why would minors get such attention? For starters, I mean, if you think about historical progression, think about, say, 500 years ago. By the time you were probably 14 or so, you were pretty much well on your way, either because you already stayed on the family farm, or you were already getting married, especially if you're a female or whatnot. And with the rise of industrial economy, then we get this notion of sort of now that knowledge can't really just be spread on the family farm. Now they have to get more of a knowledge of commerce, more of a knowledge of, suppose, how to in bureaucracy and government and whatnot, especially with the rise of the nation state. This is the reason why we see usually a progression of a legal age rising, and especially
18 and 21.
Yeah, 18. For example, yeah, but. In the process, now we've arrived at a point to where maybe what we think about as minors probably is becoming altered. Because formerly, the word minor, think about the word minor. Minor means minor as in smaller, as in not really having as much capacity to take on day-to-day tasks of the quote-unquote adult world. But now that we actually have hacking, and now that we actually have what? I mean, people going for their GEDs only because they quit school early so they could go into a tech firm and actually be a sysadmin or a programmer.
Get 5-6-figure incomes like that.
Exactly. Yeah. So now we got to ask ourselves a question. Now that knowledge is no longer really just imparted to these protected miners, as it were, now that the miners are actually going in and collaborating with one another and entering into industry and entering into the post-industrial age, then we ask ourselves, maybe the word miner is becoming outdated. Maybe people under an arbitrarily set age will have a new identity, perhaps one where they're more empowered to take on areas of economy, politics, et cetera, et cetera. So.
You also look at people like who wrote the decryption software for DVD, who was himself, they were young adults. Were they teenagers?
The DVD, right?
Yeah.
The Linux DVD? Were they young adults? They were close to that.
Yeah, I think they were like 18 to 20 or something like that. And then you have the guy who wrote the DECSS software, who was a teenager, working on his dad's computer, used his dad's account to upload it to the net, and they got mad at the dad for doing that, but he's the one that wrote the software, and everybody was thinking, my God, this kid can actually do this. What else can they do? Actually, we can do a whole lot. If you put your minds to it, anybody can. Some of the stuff was only a matter of time. Sometimes minors just have more time than adults do. Adults have to worry about jobs 24/7, and keeping up everything. Kids, you know, oh, lucky, I get to go spend 6 hours on the internet after school. Oh, fine. Let's see what I can do. And so they do some of this stuff. You have other people. Let's see. I think the youngest people in the Southeastern 2600 group, I think Johnny X ever said, was a 14-year-old girl who her parents were just okay with her coming to the 2600 group with a lot of really strange, geeky, mostly guys, so there's only one other girl at the time in the group, and hang out with them for like 2 or 3 hours one Friday every month. And her parents were okay with that. I think she moved away a few years afterwards. Don't know when that was. I think it was in the early 90s, late 80s. But you also have, here's a personal experience I had in high school. People saw me as a hacker. They said, hey, cool, can you change my grades? I could. My freshman year, I got offers upwards of $10,000 in total value of changing people's grades. I didn't. I also helped the administrators of my school save several thousand dollars over the past 4 years of not having to call somebody out to fix stupid hardware problems, such as, this computer doesn't recognize the network anymore. Shall we try rebooting? Stuff like that. Or other various minor problems where, oh, looky, my printer doesn't print anymore. I go fiddle with a couple of cables, and, wow, it works again. Don't have to call somebody else out like that.
So there's a self-rewarding sort of element to this.
Yeah, and then the other great thing about it was I got permission from my school's principal to hack the hell out of my school network. Anything I wanted to do, I could do it, and I had full permission. I still have full permission if I want to. It actually got easier because we went from a Novell 3.12 server that's all kernel-based. You can't do any single thing on it unless you take down the server, recompile the whole kernel just to add a printer. That was the only way you could add a printer in that. Now they've upgraded to two Windows NT 4.0 servers without any service packs on them. The original, okay. I had to tell a person, hey, look, a year ago when they got installed, hey, look, Service Pack 5 just got released. He says, it did? Well, I have Service Pack 3 here. Do you think that'll work just as good? It's like, well, 5's a lot later than 3. Usually it's good. Don't get Service Pack 6. Get the Service Pack 6, Service Pack 1 of 6, I think is what it is. But most, I found out that also in the state of Georgia, basic computer education includes keyboarding. Quick poll here. How many people are touch typists of any way, shape, or form? Okay. How many people have a fairly high accuracy rate when they type? Okay. How many people here type fast? Okay, good. How many of you want to go back learning A and press A 10 times? S, D, F, G, H, A, K, L, semicolon, QWERTY, U, I, O, P, Z, X, E, V, B, N, M. And go through all that for a whole semester worth just so you can learn, here is where the keys are. Really stupid thing. I was lucky. I think I was the only kid in my whole class that was able to do this. I got my counselor to say, hey, I don't need keyboarding. I can go to word processing, of which I spent 3/4 of my time playing around in DOS and making QBasic programs just for fun.
I'm going to add the comment that my school still won't let me take computer programming because I haven't had keyboarding, and I can type well over 70 words per minute and basically program. I've got the basic knowledge of 3 programming languages.
My school, computer programming, I asked my counselor what it involved, and she said, well, they use IBMs. And that was her response to what they used for computer programming. They use QBasic for DOS that shipped with, DOS 5.0 and 6.22 and all. And they still use that for computer programming. In order to take, what do they offer? Pascal, I think, at Southern Polytechnic State University, that's about a mile away. You had to be a junior or senior, have a 3.0 or above, be 16 or above, and have X number of credits. And that's, you had to have that before you were allowed to do this. And that was the only advanced class they have. Beyond that, the technology class. I don't know, I guess a lot of you probably had shop when you were in high school. It is now most likely a technology, introduction to technology class. I had it, I loved it, I took it for 3 years, it's all I had for me. Then they kick you out because they don't have anything else beyond that. Only problem was you have all these idiots that didn't want to take the class, ruin your first year. That's what happened to most of the people. You have a lot of idiots cut up. It's a slack class because they didn't have anything else to take. Here's a class to take, and didn't have anything to do with it. I guess in high school, if you can take the higher level of classes, you get most of the idiots out, and it's a much better learning experience then.
Well, that and also, if you think about people who go into instruction and technology in high school, for starters, all of the skilled programmers or even semi-skilled programmers are already going into industry because of the employment crunch that's going on right now. So I'm not disparaging because there are a lot of smart people who do teach in high school as far as technology is concerned. It's just that, for starters, a lot of the administrators who do the hiring don't really know what they're doing when they hire. Because most of the hiring that goes on in education is very much word of mouth. It's the same thing in corporate America, but much more so in education. Word of mouth, connections, that sort of thing. Not really skill per se, because you don't have anyone else in the school that you can demonstrate your skill to. So likewise, they're more apt to hire you just from what they've heard of what their records may be, but it may be distorted for all they know. They have no idea. So.
Here's a quick estimate on what a salary of one of my network people in my school district makes. $16,400 a year. That is what she makes. I don't know if it's he or she, actually. But that's what the network help person that's supposed to be traveling amongst several schools is making, that they just that they had for like the past year or two. And with payments like that, you can see sometimes why they get the lowest bidder. $16,400 is not much. It's less than what all the teachers make. And you'd have to have two of them to make one teacher, basically, in salary. If people actually paid the technology people a little bit better, you might have better education stuff, too.
I think we should back it up a little bit and look at the broader scale. Here's just a statistic to throw at you. 9 out of 10 jobs involve some sort of computer use today. I mean, and that's a lot. And a lot more jobs are requiring a lot more computer skill. And a lot of employers are having to take time to train their employees that haven't been trained yet. I think the education as far as computers in public schools for, you know, minors, obviously, is really crappy as far as that goes. I mean, it's gotten a lot better, but it's still really crappy because, I mean, the hardest thing the advanced computer programming class in my school had to do was make a web page. And that's not, I mean, they didn't even teach them how to do a bubble sort in, like, basic. I like that look because that's, my dad was like, what are they trying to teach? You know, my dad taught me how to do a bubble sort when I was 14 or something. And I was like, well, that's pretty easy, and they can't teach that in class or anything. They just had to make a web page, and they didn't even have to code it in HTML.
Page.
Yeah, they used like AOL Press, where it's all visual. You just insert the picture, move it around, and, you know, send it to the AOL site, and then it's on there. And that was the hardest thing they had to do. And you're talking about the advanced computer programming class at my school, and that's sad because my school in Cobb County is actually one of the most technologically advanced schools. We've actually got a T1 line in our school, which is pretty cool, but there's just almost zero education for anyone that's very curious in computers, and that's one of the main things that... you have some minors, well, a lot of minors are very curious, or kids or whatever you want to call them, are very curious at a young age about how things work. And basically, it's sad that, you know, they're deprived of learning that in high school when they'll probably most need it to go on to a job in their future. And, you know, you can take cosmetology and you don't even have to take a intro to tech class in our school. And I just think personally that's really sad that it's wasted like that.
I guess I should ask right now if anybody has any questions while we're talking here or anything.
Oh, yeah. Please wait for the mic and raise your hand. Yes, we're recording this.
Okay, cool. Well, I go to school in Cobb County at Walton, and I've known...
I feel sorry for you. I feel sorry for you.
I know. But I started programming my... I'm going to be a junior. I started programming second half of my freshman year.
Talk, please. Thank you.
Oh, okay, sorry. And I started programming the second half of my freshman year, and over the past year and a half, the main problem I've seen is a lack of curriculum to teach. My freshman year was the first year they started teaching C++. And
Whoa, they actually teach that at your school.
Yes.
That's amazing.
And you start out with that, too. You don't start in basic or something to move up. I mean,
well, that... Well, okay, go on.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, they're prepping us for the AP test. So,
well, okay, AP, that's advanced placement. That's a very small percentage of the school, too. The vast percentage of the school isn't going to have access to that kind of class, probably. Am I right?
Well, if you take all 4 years or teacher recommendation.
There you go.
But my point is, though, that the basic problem I've seen so far is that the curriculum is not there. They're still trying to find textbooks. I mean, my last textbook was entitled C++ for U++. I mean...
One suggestion, don't use textbooks. Use C++ Programmer's Bibles for Dummies. They sometimes work wonders.
But I guess all I was trying to say is, like, I think it doesn't have... It's like the teachers are using what they have. It's just a lack of curriculum based on the county, I think, is the major problem.
Yeah, you know, some schools, like... he's probably familiar with Sprayberry. That's where we have our T1 line. And we actually, you know, we have a lot of computers and a lot of equipment available, and we have a very nice graphics section of our school, I guess. They do video production type stuff in our school, but there's still, even with all the fancy equipment, there's still a lack of curriculum, and then there's even sometimes a lack of teachers to teach it that know enough about it.
They also have to teach to the lowest common denominator that the dumbest person in the entire school could actually might understand some of this stuff on the first day.
Yeah, they have to teach so everyone passes. You know that, right?
Yeah, if you have 90% of the class failing a programming class, they're like, hey, look, this is too hard. Let's go back to basic, not C, and see if people do better now, which might actually be a really bad thing for most people. Quick question. What all do you do in your C++ class? I'm just curious.
Actually, we kind of lucked out because I have a retired Air Force colonel or something that teaches the class, and he programmed all throughout his Army career or Air Force career, too. So he has a pretty good knowledge, and we program just basically we're doing a lot of database manipulation and using the AP classes right now. So we basically gear our learning towards the AP test pretty much, which this is good points and bad points, but... You do learn quite a bit.
Does the AP, out of curiosity, does the AP test give you college credit if you
pass?
Yes,
it does.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
It's the 5-point thing, and it's standardized. But just and there's actually, the other thing is there's 2 AP tests, but I know as far as in Cobb County, you can only take 1 AP class, even though there's 2 tests. So you have to pay the $80 or whatever to take the second AP test, which is kind of like...
Actually, I have a question for everybody, for anybody here. How many of you have taken a computer class in high school and have advanced so much that the teacher, you could sense that the teacher was actually felt a little bit unease or felt a little bit challenged, as it were? Yeah. Well, the big reason...
Most definitely.
Well, one big reason is, for instance, the one big thing you learn as far as teaching is concerned, is how to plan. I mean, teachers have to be the most obsessive planning freaks there are. Just, you know, I would be surprised. Like, ask your teacher sometime for their lesson plan. You know, first of all, they'll kind of look at you a little askance. You know, why do you want that? But really, though, get a lesson plan of theirs. They're all going to look pretty much the same throughout the year, and it's very much going to be on a set schedule on what they're going to teach, how they're going to teach it, et cetera, et cetera. When you've got a student, a wild card, as it were, going into the process and actually advancing knowledge beyond not only what the teacher wanted to advance it to, but even the teacher's own capacity, they freak out. Because really, though, they have a set curriculum, because even though there's supposed to be this new emphasis on creativity in the schools and independent thinking, it's just isn't going to transpire because schools are set up as a bureaucracy. And as such, they have a very finite mission that they have to accomplish. And just what Fuller was talking about, this conflict between equality and meritocracy, that is, you have the intelligence, in other words, you have to strike a compromise sometimes between what you can teach to the lowest common denominator and how much you can actually let the cream of the crop advance as such. There's more of an emphasis on schools, I think, to have sort of this broad-based common denominator knowledge to be taught, because it is a universal institution. And likewise, they want a curriculum that wants to, I suppose, be more representative, as it were, of the student body. But that's the reason why hackers get into so much, I suppose, differentiation from everyone else. That's why hackers are an identifiable subculture, because they are the hyper-informed, illiterate underground. And as such, they can't have their needs met by public education, at least as far as it exists, because the system won't let them advance that much. It won't let them collaborate in the truest sense of the word, because to do so, they would have to go outside of the parameters of the curriculum. And as the system goes right now, that will not work. So,
One thing you can really do to help your class and help your teacher, I guess, which I've done, is when I took word processing, after I was done, which usually was at least 5 minutes before everybody else was finished typing whatever we had to type, I would go around and help people. You know, it's like, I need to do such and such a format. I don't understand the instructions. How do I do it? And one teacher can only do so much when you have a room full of 35 kids on computers, all trying to show them, this is how you do it. You know, here's step by step, going through the windows. Setting something up.
Assuming you have a good teacher, it's even hard for a good teacher to handle 35 kids.
Yeah. The best thing we had in our school is in the word processing lab. She had a computer, and she had a big projector screen, and a little projector, and it had a projector screen, and she turned off the lights, and she would go through everything manually. And then she would give us three or four exercises to do with it. And then every few weeks, we'd have a test on stuff to do it. Best thing you can do in situations like that, or even like your C class, if you know something about already the basics, don't feel that you can't do it just because it's the teacher's job. Get up and talk to your teacher about it, or start helping people. Say, hey, talk to your neighbor. Do you need some help? And start helping them that way, and then you'll find yourself much better in a situation with the entire class and the teacher, by the teacher thinking, wow, cool. It's not just that you know all this stuff, you know this stuff, and you can actually help me, you can help teach it, which is cool.
Be a teacher's pet.
Yeah, sometimes it works wonders. Another quick poll. How many people here are in any form of education or teaching? I'm just curious.
Anyone in education of
in the field.
People?
I'm certified to teach in the state of South Carolina, if that means anything.
Teach what?
Teach what?
Teach history, social science, and whatnot, but, you know, I'm pretty much beyond that. I mean, you know, I'd rather, after my student teaching stint, I vowed I would never step into a high school as an employee ever again in my life. Just because I found the system so crushing, just because I found creativity stifled, and very much I was in, and also there were personality conflicts too. I mean, you know, my personality and that of the typical educator doesn't exactly mesh. And it wasn't just that, but it was also knowledge, common interest, et cetera, et cetera. So, but yeah, you know, technically I could walk into high school and theoretically teach, but I really wouldn't want to. That's why I'd rather be a professor, because there, then, you know, it's not much more teaching as much as it's research, and it's much more about, in other words, you're paid to think. In school, you're paid to teach, not necessarily to think. So,
yeah. And sometimes you're paid to teach to take tests, not actually learn stuff. I've learned this from some of my classes where they teach you, this is how you do it, this is what's going to be on the test. We'll review it the day before the test. The day of the test, we'll review any problems you have, then I'll give you the test. That's probably one of the most problematic things in education today, in that a lot of school districts and teachers don't teach to teach anymore. Even back, you know, in the 1800s, you were taught the basics of reading, writing, and arithmetic. And then you went out and helped on this family farm, or until you maybe got a job as a lawyer, a doctor, a merchant in the city, if you were lucky. In this century, you know, a lot of people, early in the century, people went to school. They'd go to maybe high school still. Some still didn't even go to high school. Some, it was increasing, though. And you have people that were finding themselves more and more in working class and farming and stuff like that. And then now with computers and all, you see a lot of people that you go through high school and college, or you get certified and stuff, and you're right out in the marketplace, you have a certified job. One thing I felt is, you know, I could have walked out of high school when I turned 16 and probably gotten a nice $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 job with what I knew then on computers and teaching or working on computers as troubleshooting, network install and stuff.
Can I brag on you a little bit, Fuller?
Sure.
All right. He's got a job at Lockheed Credit Union, with, and he basically, you know, is keeping track of everyone's payroll. Is that right?
No, well, I told my human resources vice president about 4 weeks ago that all the people in the computer department, all five of us, can walk in and from any computer on the network log into your machine and download every single payroll record for every single employee of this financial institution.
Yeah,
and they kind of like blinked at me. It's like, whoa. And this all came out of me installing one upgrade to his what was I doing? I think it was an Outlook update onto his machine. And he was wondering, how did you get in without knowing my password? It says, I have the administrator access on all machines. I have the administrator password on all our servers. Don't have it yet for our mainframe, but I don't need to know that. Only three people know it. But there's stuff like that. I get paid to sit in front of computers all day. It's fun. It's cool. Sometimes all I do is sit there and play solitaire. Other days, I run around all the time.
That's a pretty significant job for a 17-year-old. I mean, you know, considering the other guys doing it are how old?
Flipping burgers at McDonald's or something like that, you know.
Well, how old are the other guys working with you?
You know, let's see. The oldest one is, I think he's in his 50s. That's Danny. But he's been there for 35 years. He knows exactly one system. He knows most of the insides and outs of the system, and he's going to probably retire in 5-10 years. He has enough comp time right now. He could take off 6 months, fully paid. That's how much overtime he's put in 35 years, to take 6 months off if he wanted to. Don't have to worry about having the pager on him to be on call or anything like that. Just walk out. 6 months later, come back in, take up his job again. Then you have somebody like Richard, my boss, who is in his early 30s, who actually was in theater for 7 years professionally in New York, then figured out, I can't make money doing this. Let's use my computer science minor. So he did. Now he's the vice president. You have other people like Alfred and Mike, who are doing stuff. You have Eric, who just graduated from college last fall, and he's a computer programmer. And all he does is sit there and write scripts for our mainframe financial software. So,
sorry. Actually, question for both of you. Let's kind of go beyond high school and get to college, actually. Is, of course, you know, what's becoming more and more the typical norm is that either you go to college because you either, A, you want to take kind of the grand tour of the university, booze around, whatever, pick up chicks for 4 years, or B, you want to go into something like business, maybe get an MBA somewhere down the road. But now that we have it to where technology no longer requires, or at least, you know, knowledge of technology doesn't necessarily equate a 4-year degree, what do you all think is going to be the future of college afterwards? Or is it going to decline, or are they actually going, or do you see signs that they may adjust?
It will still have a purpose, but we may not have college in the sense we have today, such as right now I think there are 3 online universities that are actually active at this moment that you can get courses on, that you can get continuing education credits or credits you can transfer that are fully accredited, that you can go from take a class on there of, say, some class, you know, History 101. You could take it over the internet. Your computer-based training, videotape, stuff like that, and you transfer it to your college, and you've already had that credit for a year or whatever it is, or how many hours you need. That is one future. There are about 4 more that are starting up. Who was it? IBM and somebody else were making one that's going to be online starting next year. is going to try and offer starting college. There's another site on the internet that does high school stuff. You can take high school courses and get them transferred to your current high school. You don't have to be restricted to the four-year high school anymore.
My school offers a virtual high school, which is actually kind of cool. You know, it's just online education, basically. You can get a full semester's worth of credit done with this virtual high school program. Do they offer that at Walton there? I think it takes like a full semester to do, but it's only actually like, you know, once or twice a week logging in, getting this lesson and working on it or something related to that. No, I haven't actually taken anything yet. I'm probably going to sign up for it next year, but I haven't actually taken anything on it yet. But it is from friends that I've had friends that take it. They say it's it does teach you stuff, and it's a good way to get another credit for high school down in your spare time at home.
And I also saw a couple of other things. Yeah, they're going to go from freshman and high school level all the way up to PhD college level and stuff. You can take courses online. That'll be the future, that you don't have to go to a college. You don't have to be restricted for 4 years, staying at a campus, paying for a room and board and all that other fun stuff. You can stay at home, work full time, and then at night log on to your campus thing and do stuff.
He's got a question. We got a question out there.
Is this on? Okay.
Yeah.
I find that what all you're saying is really great, you know, the future of education and all. But until corporate accepts what you're talking about, it really doesn't matter. Until corporate America really accepts it. Because they still want to see that four-year degree. Or not, most of them want to see that four-year degree from a accredited college. And a lot of them don't really respect online colleges as much as, you know, brick-and-mortar colleges.
Yeah, they might not respect them now, but as the future progresses, the importance of computers and these online universities are going to start getting bigger and bigger, and who knows, maybe one day you'll have, you know, you want to sign up for this university, you send in your application and or email your application, and you're on this university online, and this university exists only in a mainframe. It's a whole campus in a mainframe somewhere.
Yeah, you just have to make sure it's accredited. But like I was saying, the three right now, they don't offer the full course load. You can't get a diploma from them yet. It's only for, you can take a couple classes, and you can take it, it'll fill in for your current college load or high school. Like next year, they're going to try and do that in a couple places. Their accredited college classes, so you can transfer them fully. Just as if you went from, say, Georgia Tech to MIT, your courses and your credits would transfer. Well, 99.9% of them, a couple odd classes may not. But that's the same thing. That's all they do right now, but they will be getting further.
Well, that also, and you can understand why corporate America would not want to accept the e-college, as it were, at this point in time, because it is still very much in the transition stage. But then again, think about when it actually reaches a mature stage. Will corporate America still embrace it? Yes, there'll be more people with e-degrees, but at the same time, they also miss out some vital parts of the college experience. For instance, you know, there is some socialization that has to be involved that, of course, you won't get on the computer. Sure, you can socialize on the computer, of course. I mean, you know,
it's not the studying same.
Chat rooms all the time.
It's not the same, though. I mean,
And, you know, basically making virtual communities. I mean, you know, how many books have been written about that? But at the same time, I think that if there is going to be more of an acceptance of an e-college, it's going to take a lot of time. It's even though the digital economy is moving at warp speed, traditional institutions of power, especially corporate America and government, even when they're doing their hiring and whatnot, I really don't see – in other words, I think people probably for maybe a couple of decades to come with an e-degree are going to still be at a disadvantage. It just – it's going to – in other words, not only are they going to have to accept that they got viable academics, but also they're going to have to accept that they've been socialized into the system somewhat. Not completely, because corporate America does want free-thinking persons to kind of think outside of the box, as it were. But
just as long as they're inside the box.
Yeah. Pretty much.
One more, okay. And then I'll be done.
Okay.
I know a lot of people, a lot of friends who didn't finish their first year of college before they were dragged off to work by money.
Oh, yeah. Very powerful incentive.
Yeah. One thing I see that I'm planning on actually doing is where I work right now, I'm trying to get myself a full-time job there. But once I do, or even if I continue part-time for the rest of the year, my boss has said, anything you want to do for education, we'll help you pay for it. If I want to go to college, whatever college it is, as long as it's locally and I can still work there, yeah, they'll help me pay for it. Maybe pay as much as half of what any balance I need on it. If I want to get certified, say MCSE, Microsoft, Cisco, Citrix, A+, NetPlus, stuff like that, I'm actually thinking of getting my MCSE just because I want to prove to myself, hey, I actually know this stuff. I know this stuff, but some people may not believe that a 17-year-old just out of a high school actually knows what he's talking about. That and also a lot of what I've learned about TCP/IP and Microsoft Windows NT in particular I've learned entirely from reading MCSE books, How to Take the Test. It's wonderful, except I've yet to make a good and complete install of Windows NT on any single computer now at work. It always BSODs somewhere in the process, or we have bad hard drives, bad motherboards, something.
Imagine that.
Yeah, imagine that. But some of the courses there are great. I want to take the Cisco stuff because Cisco is a great, they make wonderful firewalls, routers, but it's complex. I want to learn how to do that. There's a gentleman behind there, and then him, yeah.
I just want to add that, it is a big thing, the education, the credibility for the amount of education you have. But if the school, you can raise the point, I mean, I know they won't accept it really, but the point is if the schools, like public schools, and don't offer the education for your technical or particular skills for a technical class, and they have it online, then you could say, well, hey, at least you could say, I took this class, but it wasn't even offered in our public schools or whatever. Yeah, if you see where I'm going with that.
I'm about 35. I have a 4-year undergraduate degree in liberal arts, and I work for a Fortune 100 company here in Atlanta that's income gross sales is in the hundreds of billions of dollars. And I'm going to tell you right now that as far as IS is concerned, they can't find enough good people.
Exactly.
And I would say that one of the things that they're doing is they're limiting themselves because they're not paying the kind of salaries that you need to get the best people.
There's a huge, massive demand for people with the right skills.
We simply can't fill the need. And the big joke that I have is, the MCSE is must call someone experience. So whereas, you can sit and read books all day, but you also have to, as you said, have some hands-on experience to understand.
Yeah, that's what I loved about my current job. I actually got to work on what I've been reading on. So, yeah.
But that is a tremendous problem. And I deal with some programming people who have they don't have an idea of the responsibility that they have when they take and manipulate data that we may have spent 3 or 4 months collecting and going over, and then they make a change which might cause us to expend 50% more of our budgeted man hour, which is probably around $40 an hour with 6 people on my team. So it's very, very frightening. I think we're going to see it to the point where, as Fuller says, you're going to have young people with the skills who are going to go and they're going to go to work, and the businesses are going to pay for their education for them to further themselves. But I also think, as Nimrod says, that it's very necessary that in the high schools that we do make the technical training available to the young people who are interested in it. My question for Lothar would be, as a former educator, did you find that you had enough of support from the families of the students in the community? Because the teachers cannot do it alone. My mother taught public high school in New Orleans for 20 years, and she retired from it. And the parents were definitely at one point not past the teacher. So I don't feel that it's the responsibility of the system to fully educate the students. I think that the parents definitely have to be involved in it.
Well, in a lot of ways, parents have sort of a push-pull relationship with the schools. That is, they sort of pull back. In other words, sometimes the schools will want to do something experimental with the curriculum, and the parents can be resistant. Or, B, they may also, especially if you're, say, for instance, you have a high school in a college town where the professors or the parents very much, they want, this is where the push factor comes in, and they want their school, of course, you know, they want their school to be livable, and they also want it to actually, you know, to where they can guarantee their kid a seat in Harvard or whatnot. Really, though, the role of parents, it can be ambiguous. It really depends on what sort of setting that you're going to be in. Personally, for me, I did my stint kind of on the border of suburban and urban Greenville, South Carolina. Some ways the parents, they did kind of, in some ways the parents didn't really trust me because I was so young in educating. I mean, you know, at first they were kind of, warm to me, but then again, afterwards, I think they kind of noticed a bit of the job dissatisfaction I was having as well. That probably played into it somewhat, but I did find some good parents that did. I could tell when the student was making the grade, as it were. Oftentimes it was the parents, but sometimes either the parents were very much supportive of their children, or they were just pushing the children so as to just capture that grade without much emotional support going into it. And I could notice sometimes you could see with parents like that, the way that they push their children, their work is sometimes good but not consistently. Sometimes there can be breakdown. Really, though, you can't really put one label on parents. It's just very ambiguous and very much in a flux how they operate.
I certainly don't think that parents support the school systems, say, the way they did.
Do what?
I don't think they support the school systems as they did, say, 30 or 40 years ago.
Oh, no.
By no means. And the teachers simply cannot.
They've given
do
it to
alone.
The government. Get the government out of education a lot of ways, and it'll be much better.
Yeah. Well, certainly.
That's
agree.
Why my new high school is being built. It's $30 million over budget, 2 years late. It's supposed to be top of the line. It's not going to be. It's moved out to where everybody who will give their kids at their 16th birthday BMW so they can wreck it next week and then buy them another one. They live three blocks in the place. They'll drive their BMWs to the high school. But everybody else from my side of the city, who some of which can't even afford a car in like 3 or 4 years, they have a hand-me-down from like a relative who, you know, if they miss a bus in the morning, right now it takes them 20 minutes or to an hour to walk to school. It's going to move out another hour's walking distance from where it is currently. If you're going to miss 2 hours in the morning, why go to school at all? Problems like this also need to be addressed for future issues. A lot of people voted for this high school. My parents were against it. They had three possible locations. One, way out there, where they made a very large profit. So there was also lots of under-the-table dealings because they bought 53 acres for the price of 58 in a urban setting. That is a lot of money when you count 5 acres of land. Then they had to buy back another 5 so they could put in a place for the buses to park for their high school at, when they were picking up and dropping off students. Didn't plan this in beforehand. And then a lot of other problems with that. That's why government and education do not mix too well. I mean, the government is supposed to provide for the common good and all, but they don't need to be micromanaging every person's lifestyle and school and all.
How do you feel about the presidential candidates running around saying that we should have the internet in every classroom?
Huh. Well, that's standard. That's a standard line, of course.
Exactly.
It's impossible in my high school. They're putting in 3 lines for each room. They're doing right now it costs $600 per room just to wire them. The school does not have enough money to pay for this right now, nor do they have enough money to buy all the computers, except they just bought $2,000 a piece Dell laptops with DVD, 15-inch displays, and NTSC PAL in-out video editing equipment on the back of them, plus the full replicator port.
What for?
Just so they could for the teachers. Each and every school official in the my school district got one.
Yeah.
That is a waste of money.
Then after him, Atlanta Public School System. I went to middle school, Inman Middle School, which is the best middle school for Atlanta. It's in the richest part of Atlanta, you know. They get the largest amount of funding, and they produce the largest grades. Yet, that school can't even afford to give an English book to every student so they can take it home with them. Yet, they somehow managed to put it in the budget to buy a $3,000 gateway computer for the library. Yet, they can't, you know, have a book for every student, you know? It's frivolous spending.
Well, a lot of it is also, I mean, school boards, yeah, just one final comment, we'll get to him. Really, those school boards, they got to capture on the next fad. Education, as it exists now, is very much a faddish occupation. It's very much a faddish field. You have to jump on what's hot, what's new. I mean, sure, you know, online, we all know that the online world.
There are so many people working for an internet company who can't spell.
Yeah.
How many times, I can't count how many times my dad has found a spelling error on either the local news, and he's even seen several on CNN.
Yes.
I mean, that's the, you know, you'd think if you typed it in and, you know, you read over what you typed in.
I mean, come on, you use Microsoft Word. It has a built-in autocorrect feature. How bad can you be that it does not work? Yeah.
This is spelled wrong. Okay.
Actually, we'll get to...
Yeah, that's what happens a lot.
All right, your question?
I'm from Jacksonville, Florida. I took keyboarding to get into the regular, you know, computer class. Mm-hmm. And there was nothing beyond that. That was it. Only the basics. Some stuff happened where I had to drop out. Where would I go for further training and classes to learn stuff?
Well, your local library will help a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2600 yes. group. Find a 2600 group. There are places all around you, everywhere. Maybe it may take you 30 minutes to drive once a month, but you will get there.
What I would recommend is that you do start with the books, and especially some of the documentation online. I mean, there's some excellent tutorials out there. And really, though, I would use 2600 as a supplement to that, especially because a lot of times the authors of these books don't know what they're talking about. Not overall, but in just some places, you can get corrections, especially from other hackers. I mean, you know, that face-to-face sort of interactions is also important.
Yeah. So, read some of the Four Dummies books. The Four Dummies books I recommend to everybody because they are for dummies. They are for people that don't know what a computer is or what a certain thing is on a computer, like word processing. What in the world is it? And they go from the basic. Here is the file menu. This is where you open it. Here's to click on new file. This is where you type. Hello. Stuff like that. You know, basic stuff. And I recommend those to everybody. Your local library should probably have a few. Just check them out, read through them, practice them, and keep going from there, yeah.
That's one thing I was going to get to is where to find information. I mean, I am still in the learning process, as I mentioned.
AltaVista.
I mean, you can find a lot of stuff online. If you have a lot of free time or, you know, if any parents in here would have kids and they are interested in it, you know, a lot of people.
Alt.24-hour help desk. Wonderful group. If you can survive on 5,000 matches.
On
a
side note, a lot of parents are, I don't mean to offend anyone when I say this, but if I do, I'm sorry, but a lot of parents or people say it's really bad to spend a lot of time on the internet. But I don't care what you're doing on the internet. You always have to read something. And any kind of reading is good because, I mean, that's just on a side note. And also, there's masses upon masses of pages and books and stuff that you can find online about information on computers. I mean...
/. CNET News.
We could probably write out a whole list of just sites where you can find information. And also, you can ask other people. I mean, not just necessarily hackers. I mean, other people that know something about computers, you know.
Somebody like at your church, if you belong to a church or wherever you go.
I mean, wherever you go, there's
maybe a next-door neighbor or something.
Probably someone that knows about computers, and there's probably someone that you can ask. And like they said, your library will have a ton of books. Mine does, and it's not a very big library.
Another thing is, on his comment about having a book in every classroom, first you have to have enough room for all the students. Because at my high school, we had kids that would come in and stand up for a day in each class.
because they couldn't fit them
all. I had some of those in sixth grade.
We had
60 people more sign up the first day than they anticipated. They anticipated 580 when I was in sixth grade. They ended up with 620 the first day. The next day they had 660 people total in sixth grade. So, yeah, we had people. We had, like, 40 people in one classroom for kids. And they would, like, walk in, and half the people were standing in the classroom. The teacher was, like, saying, I was like, holy shit, what the hell do I do now?
But we had...
Yeah, Mike, please.
Mike.
Talk Mike. In the microphone, damn it.
Which county do you live in? Or where?
I live in Duval.
Okay.
Jackson,
in Florida.
The county commissioner for your county who hand out the building permits, they're supposed to be keeping track of how many students are going to be in it, you know? And they just don't care. They want the money. They don't care. They want the money. There's payoffs in the county commissioner. Fulton County, this county right here, the FBI just came through and just found so much corruption. It's intolerable how much corruption was found in our county. There was just a report about a scandal up in some county north of here. You know, I don't like to use the term, but so I won't use it here. But in the middle of nowhere, and there's payoffs to widen a road in the middle of nowhere just because the person approving it. What do you put up? Just because the person approving it owned 3 acres of land, you know, and he got paid $20,000 an acre to sell it. So he approved three times. You know, he's going to be brought up on ethics charges. You can go to any commissioner in any state pretty much in the U.S. and look at their voting record, and you'll see corruption, you know. That's the problem that's causing our school systems, overcrowding. They're starting to close down schools in Atlanta. And now our population in the city of Atlanta is starting to rise, so now they're going to start closing schools.
Ooh, that makes sense.
I also had something with that in the Marietta City School District where I go. They closed two schools, and they built a brand new one out on the side of a mountain while lots of subdivisions are being developed. Great, wonderful idea. Now all of a sudden they figured out, hey, we need these two other elementary schools back because we have too many kids. Another problem is they don't build schools big enough, not in the sense that they don't handle enough population. My high school cannot go over two stories. Okay, my middle school cannot go over one story. No elementary school in Marietta City School District can go over one story. They're afraid that some poor kid might trip and fall down his pair of steps or something. Mm-hmm. That is why they don't build them. It is stupid. I mean, if my mom tells me when she went to high school, it was a 5-story building.
Yeah. And I think they got a real problem if a kid can't, you know, walk down a stairwell.
Yeah, but I mean,
we have to teach him how to walk.
Yeah, that might be something. Yeah, that's a bad thing. Oh no, they don't sit in front of computers all day and like absorb mind information. There's actually a good book about that by Jerry Purnell, a wonderful sci-fi writer. He wrote a book, Higher Education. It's a sci-fi thing. Talks about where society and education has gotten so far down that they use headphones that it's a reader that no kid can read anymore. You can't. You're not taught to read. You're taught to listen, and you understand by listening. Until they all get this whole group of kids get kicked out of high school because they pulled a prank and got the mayor completely drenched in water or something like that in the story. And they find themselves on a spaceship then as their only other job opportunity. And all of a sudden they figured out they have to read. Wow, this is difficult. They spent 6 months figuring out how not to use this little reader card to read. And some of that stuff can develop. One thing I've noticed is via voice and Dragon Naturally Speaking can actually do more harm than good, because when you type, you actually know you're typing. If you're talking, you may go off rambling, and all of a sudden you may start speaking phrases, and you may send off an email, And all of a sudden you start using phrases again. You may like lapse in your educational style or something. Stuff like that can happen.
We're technically like supposed to be out of here since our panel is only supposed to last an hour, but the next panel doesn't come into one. But are there any other final questions? Or
yeah, good.
This will be an hour panel and a half an hour Q&A. Really, it's really, just give us like 5 minutes between panels to set up.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, so far we got plenty of time. So,
I wanted to say that I very much would love to be a teacher, but the very kind of problems that you're talking about are the reasons why I'm not going to go back and get an education degree.
Yeah. See,
I'm sitting in a room filled with a bunch of very obviously very bright, smart young people. I graduated from high school almost 20 years ago, and it kills me to hear about the lack of support from the parents. The schools aren't big enough. The student-to-teacher ratio is awful. And that's why there's a lot of people like myself who are educated, who are ethical, who would love to teach. We enjoy teaching, enjoy learning, we enjoy research, but we're not going to do it simply for those reasons.
Mm-hmm. You can sue for a five-story school, but you can't sue for it being overcrowded. So,
One of the things I noticed, at least certainly in the past 4 years, of course, I've been in college, but it seems to be by second hand, it seems that society wishes the high school to cure all the social ills. I mean, kids are doing, violent stuff. Mm-hmm. High school should try to cure this, or
it doesn't. Sometimes it promotes it.
But they're trying to give the high schools far too much responsibility, and the parents just mm-hmm. are raising the kids to the education system, which they just can't do.
Why do you think they have beginning school classes for kids as young as 3 and 4? A lot of those are because it's a daycare. You drop them off even as young as 2. You drop them off daycare. Oh, looky. Both parents work quite often. Well, the government's
that's my
paying
case,
for it.
They couldn't take care of me. So.
Well, the government's paying for it, so it's all good, Let the government pay for it. They're paying for it. I don't have to pay for it. They put them in there. The kids are aware. I've seen this with some kids I know that are rather rambunctious and rather brats of kids that I've known. But it's because they spend less than half the time at home. Half the time is spent at a school or being babysat by somebody, never with their parents, even though one of the parents could be, they could work alternate schedules. They could ask for, like, one day off each week, and just take that day and be with the kids and go to, like, a park or something. Go to a movie, nice G-rated, not let, my parents went to see The Mummy, the new one. They saw the original one with Boris Karloff many, many, many years ago. Not the original, but a re-showing of it. And they saw a 70-year-old and a 9-year-old sitting there and laughing in the movie. And
so?
What is The Mummy? R-rated?
Something no, like PG-13.
PG-13. And, you let kids in seeing stuff, some of the stuff, where you let, really young kids into R-rated movies. Granted, some kids are mature enough to see it, some aren't. But then you also have the problem that schools think, oh my gosh, you can't show anything that's above G-rated. You have to get parental permission even to show that, which is even a headache. They tried showing us some stuff in my senior year of high school that was PG-13. The teacher decided, we never saw this movie, okay? Really, we didn't. Because in order to watch a PG-13 movie in the school district, you have to get written permission from the parents. If you do not, you get sent out of the classroom to another classroom and then you have to do an alternative assignment.
Yeah.
That's how dumb it is, even though we're 17, 18, 19-year-olds and seniors in high school stuff.
My lit teacher almost got fired for showing us a version of Romeo and Juliet that had a brief nudity scene.
The original?
Yeah, I think so. And
it's like 2 seconds.
Literally almost got fired. And did she get fired? Yeah, okay.
Olivia Hussey's a babe, by the way. That's the Juliet from the Franco Zeffirelli 1968 version.
And my other drama teacher is also... My drama teacher is a great guy, but anyway. He is also a lit teacher. And he would get people to remember stuff by, making a joke out of it. And that does work, but... He would be writing on the board, and he'd be like, your assignment, and he'd write ASS, then turn around and start talking, and people start laughing. But then at least they'd remember they have it. I mean, he almost got fired because of that, because he wrote ASS, and then turned around and started talking. And then, he would do that to get them to remember it, And they were like, oh, yeah, I've got that assignment because, you know, he made the joke about it or whatever. But he almost got fired for doing that. And it gets to the point where you get so persnickety.
Come on, enjoy. Don't fight all the kids around here. Hug me. Mine isn't hacking. Don't fight all the kids.
And, well, anyway, it gets to the point where you get so persnickety about stupid stuff like that, and it just, you know, there's bigger problems out there.
Oh, there is. Well, then again, I mean, it's all about the deal of schools trying to deal with social change, as it were. In other words, even though we've gone way past the point of when that movie was originally made, now it's sort of a sense that now we have to have some sort of purified educational experience, as it were. They know, I mean, every teacher and every administrator knows that, you know, these same high school seniors have seen, you know, a lot worse when they go to the theater. But when they come into the schools, there's this sort of mindset that, you know, we have to counteract the awful cultural influences, or else it's not really so much a process of learning academics. It's because schools, in other words, they're trying to have it where schools not only represent academics, but they also represent the ideals, as it were, of what society can be at its best. You know, yes. Whatever, you know, of course, you know, our notions of what's best is, you know, sometimes very inconsistent, especially in this case. So
let's all conform, you know, let's stamp out creativeness, and let's all be the same, all know the same amount of knowledge, and, you know, that's the idea they want to create for it. And the dress code, my sister almost got suspended this year for wearing a headscarf. They said it was gang related. Yeah, there's thousands of stupid stories like that, like the guy that got suspended for a week for wearing a Pepsi shirt, and, you know, well, actually, it turned out good, though, because Pepsi gave him a lifetime supply of Pepsi. But anyway, just stupid stuff like that. You can go into thousands of things like that, and there are thousands of stories, but there are bigger problems.
Quick poll here. Who here has heard of the Wave America plan by the Pinkerton Corporation? Anybody hear of it?
I haven't, actually.
Let me give you a brief thing. Okay, who knows what the Pinkerton Corporation is?
Huh? The security guards, right?
They are a very old security group back from the 1800s.
Originally formed to suppress anarchists and other radicals and whatnot from actually exercising freedom
they
of speech.
They were the original Secret Service, correct?
Well, let me tell you what the plan was, what Rave America is. Who here has ever seen The Rave? That was a 80s cult.
Yes, The Wave.
This is something different. Who has ever seen The Rave, the movie, or the story about what happened when a teacher decided to make a cult for showing exactly how Hitler came into power? Anybody seen it? Okay. That's a different version of it. But Rave America is one step almost beyond that. Their idea was they're going to give T-shirts, cash prizes, and other things. It's a for-profit agency so that any kid can call anonymously and report any student in their entire school that is acting depressed, distressed, might be provocative in nature, might be aggressive, might be too curious into other people, might be, like, watching other people, might be doing really bad in class.
Isn't that everyone?
That's a large portion of people. Okay, this plan... read it on Slashdot. They had one hell of a long post. It took me like 15 minutes to read the entire message of just the comment of what it was. They had a whole interview with the guy. They did take off the cash prizes, though, for the thing. Ooh. What it was is you inform on anybody, and they will forward that information on to your school district. Even if it's false, they will forward it. And when Slashdot asked, what happens if this information is false? What recourse do the parents have or students have? And they said, we don't handle that. You have to talk to your school district or a school board or a school. And that is not something society needs. We do not need a secret police for that that it tells kids, hey, it's okay if you tell on somebody that's you might be
I believe
aggressive.
The legal definition should be slander, but at the same time, because we're dealing with quote-unquote minors, they theoretically don't have the same legal rights as adults, so therefore...
and that is one of the dangerous things that they are not... Actually, no, North Carolina got that passed, and I don't know if it's still going to be doing this year, but it was supposed to go into effect for this next school year. I am talking into it. Here. This is better, right? Yeah. But North Carolina was supposed to implement this plan in all their schools this year. I don't know if it's still happening or not. You have to go on the Pinkerton Rave America plan site and see if it is. Best thing you can do for your school district, get involved with a civic organization or your school district. Get to know your school district or school board members and representatives. They are supposed to work for you. Like any government official works for the people.
Or known thine enemy. I mean, that can apply as well.
And that will help education probably as much as anything. I know in the Marietta city where I live, my dad and I joined a civic organization called Impact. It has things involved Mariettans for something or other. And one of the things is the education committee on it, where adults, and now we're trying to get kids, I'm the only kid of the whole group, trying to say, look, here is stuff that's happening that's bad. I pointed out a couple things. One of our school district school board representatives was there for one of the first meetings, and I told him something about the high school. He said, I haven't heard of that. And stuff like that needs to go beyond, just small areas. It needs to go beyond what needs to come down from, like, a super wide area to small, say, like a teacher, parent, student thing. What needs to go from a problem in a classroom and maybe take it higher up. And civic organizations will help you do that.
Any more questions?
Questions, anybody?
It's good.
We'll be running out of time.
Pretty close. Yeah.
Anybody else have any more questions, comments?
Anyone?
Interested, relevant statements?
Well, thank you for coming.
Yes, thank you for coming.
All right. Oh, we were supposed to come?